Blog Talk Radio.
It is Friday once again. Welcome back into the breach. That was a song by the Braun Brothers. Was a particular band that was in Idaho in the 1980s. And that was a song about an area that Doc Z worked in when he was a Forest Service park ranger. I'll go ahead and bring him on here again. Doc Z, how we doing?
We're doing good. 13 miles up the Yankee Fork in Idaho.
Well, I thought you would appreciate that little earbud by the Braun Brothers there.
Oh, I love that. Seeing them in the Plywood Palace was great.
As I remember, that was fun, but the drive to the Plywood Palace was pretty scary. I thought we were going to end up in the Snake River.
Well, on that trip, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, you remember the crazy Forest Service person that was driving us?
Yeah, Rick, we got to partying early that day.
That was scary.
I'm sure that was interesting.
Yeah, so I put up a picture of Bonanza Guard Station there with you and I, and we had a friend who, in college, he was a river raft guide on the, was it the Snake or the Salmon?
Salmon River.
And yep. So he said, well, can you watch my dog this summer? So we took his black lab, whose name was Blue, And we had the greatest adventures with Blue Dog that summer in the mountains of southern Idaho,
Blue Dog,
So, Adrian, did you get the email that I sent you earlier?
Probably, because I was putting some pictures together.
Okay.
I didn't have a chance to look at it.
Sure. I was just wanting to show a picture. I want to do a quick update for those who follow me on my Steel Rails podcast with Bailey and Lucas. We received a locomotive sent to us from Iowa last night. She finally made it home into the roundhouse after about a week and a half transit from Iowa. Go figure. Burlington Northern right away, and they like to take their sweet time. But EMD SDP 40 number 325 in Great Northern livery. Oh, she's probably 60s, 70s, made in that era. So she's in the Great Northern paint scheme. And what I found out today is there was, we can thank of her full restoration because of an anonymous donor basically wrote a check and said, here, go get it done.
How nice. Well, that's amazing.
So she got...
It's going to take a lot of money and time for restoring.
Oh, definitely. Something like that.
It'll be really cool.
Something like that takes a number of years, especially with the two-stroke diesels in there.
Yeah, and for those of you who don't know what he's talking about, he volunteers at the St. Paul Train Museum. And so they have a track, several tracks out back.
Yeah, we're right off of a two-place main line, which I see Burlington Northern, UP, Twin Cities and Western all use that right of way. And that's actually how we get our equipment up to Osceola for our excursions. But yeah, she came up from Iowa and we're going to put her on display and probably also use her as an excursion train up in Osceola, pulling our Great Northern, cars, passenger cars.
That's really cool.
So I just wanted to let this listeners know and then also let them know tonight that we have started a three-show series on the U.S. Forest Service. And last week, as a recap, we talked to Doc Z about his time in the Forest Service as a wildland firefighter. And this week, we're going to be talking to him about his dual duty as a park ranger in the Challis National Forest. So, oh, there we go. There's one of your patches. That's cool.
Well, and you know what? When he went to being a from a firefighter to campground host, where we have this guard station called Bonanza. That's when I joined them. And so this was about 1982, right? I mean, this was like our honeymoon. It was absolutely stellar, breathtaking mountain country.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, gosh, yeah. We would sit on the, this is the back of the house here, but we would sit on the front porch and look up across the river on a mountain across this. We could see wild goats running around, mountain goats running around up there.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, so this is kind of the, what Dan was talking about.
Yeah, that front porch right there, we would sit there in the evenings and we would look across the mountain.
There were a lot of mountain goats up here, across the way in that mountain.
So as a ham radio enthusiast, is that a ham radio mast there?
Nope, that was just our radio that we had with walkie-talkies that gave us a boost to get up and over the mountains.
Oh, okay, so just a repeater.
We could contact, anybody in the Challis National Forest with that.
Sure, but you didn't have, like, a HF set or anything in the guard station?
There was no electricity.
Oh.
So they blew up Sunshine Dam down on the river, and the whole Yankee Fork went without power. So when we were there, there was no power. We had a big gas tank out front, you know, healthy gas, and we had gas lights. We had a gas stove. We had gas heater, gas refrigerator.
I mean, think about all the gadgets we have today, the cell phones and everything. Our only means of communication up there was this Forest Service radio with the radio antenna.
It was like a super, super walkie-talkie.
And it was, I mean, we were like so relaxed, you know. And when you think about today where you can barely go home without, you know, having a connectivity to work or like I work at home,
right.
I teach college at home, and I'm always like, I'm always connected, you know, like this office is my work office, but it's also part of my home. So
right.
It's never totally separate. There, the beauty of it was we could really relax. You could really do downtime.
Right.
It was totally amazing. But yeah, that antenna was for our only source of communication. We were miles up the Yankee Fork River. Pretty much wilderness area. It was absolutely gorgeous.
So then that was like a shortwave or a UHF set.
UHF, probably, yeah.
So
here we had handheld radios, but this was a base station radio.
Right. We could take calls from other people with handhelds. And we would transmit the weather to.
Okay.
Was it Chalice?
Yeah.
So, and I don't know how, we don't have a picture of it, but there was a weather station on the side of the house with different equipment and Dan would do the daily weather. You have to read the clouds. Are they, you know, I don't even remember the names. Are they the cumulonimbus or, you know, what type of clouds do you have? How much precipitation have you had overnight?
Temperature.
We have little pages.
Yeah, all those things. So these flowers that are in the foreground, those are Chinese poppies. by the Chinese immigrants who worked a lot in this area when the area was built.
As in poppy seeds?
Correct. Chinese poppy.
Those are the poppies that they, they derive opium and stuff like that from the processes in their raw state, but they were really beautiful.
Right.
Yeah.
So on that weather station, you had like an anemometer, you had...
you'd open up the box and there was all the tools. You had a clipboard, you had to sign in, and then you went, you know, instrument from instrument to instrument, what it all was.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you had it all written down, you'd call, you know, up to Chalice or 318, which was our Clayton Garden station that we originated from and lived at for years. Couple years before we came here,
because I know, you know, we touched upon weather where and this is a little bit different to, you know, talking between fire weather and normal weather of the day, but some of the groundwork and the basic things that you do, taking, you know, the weather, whether it be fire weather or a morning report, are pretty much the same.
Right. Yeah. Basically, I didn't contact anybody unless they contacted me. And then the only thing that we really, you know, put out on there was fire weather every day at 11.
I was going to say, wasn't it around noon? And I know that if you were busy in a campground, you could radio me to broadcast, go out and do the reading and broadcast it in. And I was able to do that a couple times. So, yeah.
So was you two at the station, or did they have other groups come in and use that as like a touching off point, other USFS workers?
Well, so Adrian got to go work in Stanley, Idaho at a mercantile, which is like a grocery store, but it had all kinds of stuff, well, for camping and whatever. So she would do that most of the time during the day and then come home. And one of the best things about it, they would have steaks that had just expired from what they could sell,
mm-hmm.
and we got to take them home for a reduced price. We ate well that summer.
Yeah, they were pretty much close to free. And, you know, what's interesting now is, like, you pay more for aged steaks. And it would be, like, right on the cusp of them turning, and the owner of the store would just say, hey, guys, you know, we're going to mark these off for you.
And, I mean, if you
ate a lot of good steak.
If you cook it good enough, you know, you're not, mm-hmm. I mean, because you're killing it with germs, with fire, so.
Well, and you know, those dates are a little not always accurate, but usually, you know, especially when you start thinking about canned food, you can use it longer than it does. So.
Right.
But it was fun working, because I worked at what was called the Sawtooth Mercantile, and we had everything from clothing to your outdoor camping needs, your wilderness equipment, all your groceries. And Carol King, I never met her, but she lived down there. She had a place down there, and they would come in from her area, people to shop for her and stuff.
Hmm.
And the other thing I remember about working at the Mercantile was on the way home one time, and, you know, it was a good 30-mile, oh, you know, it took probably an hour to get home to see this dog here. He was out in, like 10 miles from town.
Walking along the road.
From family, just jogging. And I, like, pull over our vehicle, and I'm like, oh, you poor little dog, you know, I'll take you home. You're, you know, starving and all this. I get home, and I open the hatchback, and Dan is like, that is a fat dog. That dog is not starving. He had absolutely no collar or anything. So that's what we called him that summer, was fat dog. And what I found out weeks and weeks later was that he was the town dog. And nobody in particular owned or claimed them, but he would rotate houses and rotate people. And so I ended up returning him to the town. But, yeah, that was Fat Dog.
Nice.
And Dan is gold panning here, which is really an interesting, I don't want to say it was a dichotomy, but it was a different, because Dan represented the kind of like the law to these gold miners, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so with your Forest Service uniform on, you just had to be careful. These guys had claims and stakes for their gold. And Dan, I know, was involved in some espionage trips during the night to see if they were dumping tailings in the stream. So maybe you could talk about that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Tom was in the area when we were there.
Who worked.
I was like a 4 miles. Yeah. From Pine Island, Minnesota. Shout out. And so we had gone to school together at the University of Idaho, and he was in forestry and I was in geology. So anyways, he's out tromping around in the woods, you know, measuring forestation and things like that, whatever. And I'm
looking at scat.
Yeah, all that fun stuff. Yeah, measuring trees and the three-finger forage finder. Four-finger forage finder. Mm-hmm. And then you set up and you can measure everything that's inside.
Okay.
For sampling size. Anyways, Eisenberg. So, yeah, on my day off that I had day off, I would you know, just go out and do some gold panning or go hiking or go explore some of the old cemeteries and things mm-hmm. that are around there. Maybe poke through the old ruins of the mines.
Well, and I'm sure there's a lot of history in that area.
You were asked to go on. I don't know, maybe can't talk about it from the Forest Service, but
No, that's fine.
Where you and Tom had like a top secret little mission you had to do.
They had a pretty good idea that one of the miners up the I forget what fork
Yankee
that one is.
Not the Yankee
Fork. Jumped off the Yankee Fork, and as you're heading up towards Clayton. Bonanza, as you're heading up there, just past Bonanza, where we live, you turn left. There was a really rugged trail that went up around there, and it would get washed out from time to time because the amount of water coming down. If there was a high rainfall up in the mountains, it would come washed it out. But they had an idea of who the miners were that were dumping tailings, and they shouldn't be dumping tailings. Tailings should go into a pond and settle out first, and then you dump those.
Yep.
So they asked us if we'd go grab a couple samples on the down low and bring them back. So
can you cross into, like, claim territory to do that, right?
No, we were just on a regular Forest Service road.
Mm-hmm.
But the tailings came into the river flows down, and that little river flows into the Yankee Fork. And so I just, grabbed a couple of bottles and was in the back of Tom's truck, and Tom kind of drove on up, and then we figured a good spot, and then I just kind of bailed out and followed right on into the stream edge there. And we went up about a mile, turned around, come back, and by that time I had collected my sample, jumped in the back of the truck, and then we hauled ass out of there. Oh, sorry.
Well, that's okay.
We moved.
Yeah, you're okay. The language police is on vacation right now, so there's no penalty for that.
Funny that you mentioned that level of doing things in secrecy, because mining is big not only in Idaho, but in Alaska. And there's the same thing in Alaska where miners really don't take well to the authorities, not only the USFS, but the mining board and all that, because they think they're just there to stop them from doing what they're doing.
Or claim jumpers.
Oh, yeah.
Claim jumpers is a big thing out there.
Yeah.
So, somebody's trespassing on your claim, you got the right to dissuade them from coming back.
Right.
A lot of people have heard that, they were self-armed, and, you can see that being in the wilderness, but I was just a little nervous that Dan had to go, do the secret missions on these miners.
Well,
for the first time, I'm like,
it was exciting.
Right.
Come on, you guys.
So I see a vehicle in the background, and I kind of remember that. Why don't you tell us, and that looks like your personal vehicle?
That is my old yellow car, just like the Dan Seals song. Yeah. It's about a 72 Mega Wagon.
Nice.
We have a lot of adventures on that.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. It made a few trips from Minnesota to Idaho and back.
21 and a half hours straight through.
We lay the back seat down and then crash out in the back. So we take turns driving.
Nice.
Well, isn't there that country song about your old Vega wagon or something?
Dan Seals.
Old
yellow car.
Yeah.
So speaking of the Forest Service, did they give you transportation, or did you have to use your personal vehicle?
The year that I got the garbage station there, I got a pickle truck.
Okay.
It was a little Dodge D50 Ram.
Yeah, this is called Bonanza Garbage Station. No kidding. I don't have a picture of it, but in the front of the guard station, there was this, maybe 25 yards from us, with this big garage, and then on the other side of it, they had housing for their volunteers.
Okay.
And there were two women that summer, I don't remember their names, they were very sweet, that were volunteers. And one night over the Forest Service radio, they were screaming and they said, you know, somebody's trying to get in, somebody's trying to get in. So Dan grabs his shotgun. Blue Dog follows Dan, and they both go out the door and leave the door open. And I'm like, what am I, chopped liver? I'm like, okay, you guys, you know. And then what it was, it ended up being a bear.
Mm-hmm.
And so they
put this brown bear.
Mm-hmm. Put a big bear trap out for it, but it never